dudes cuddling through the thimble winter. This is the Max Level Podcast. Welcome home. For the uninitiated, Max Level is a weekly breakfast powwow brought to you by RPGera.com. I'm your host, Brian, and joining me on the show this morning is the host of the Media Files. Every single Friday, it is Kyle.
Good chilly morning to you, Brian.
Is it cold over there?
I think so. Probably not as cold as where you are.
Actually, I think it's really damn nice out this weekend over here.
Okay, It's 42 outside right now.
Okay, it is 68 outside over here.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. How about that?
That's lower than our high today, so.
Yeah, you're the one, that's cold for you over there in Vegas, so.
Yeah, 42 is a little chilly.
Yeah, it's where you guys, like, bundle up like it's the apocalypse or the
put on
winter.
A sweater, a beanie. Yeah. Don't go outside.
Yeah, shut down the city.
I had soup last night. Oh,
dang. Not chili.
It was amazing.
Should have had some chili.
I had chili earlier in the week. I had chili on Monday. Yeah, on Halloween we made chili.
Well, there you go. Chili's a good good cold weather food.
Yeah, we make it every Halloween. It's our Halloween dinner.
Nice. Awesome. That's awesome.
It was amazing.
Special shout out to Occam's Laser for majority of the music you hear today during the show. Go check him out wherever you can find music and people, including YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You won't be disappointed. Please take a moment and do us a favor if you'd be so kind. Head on over to Apple Podcasts or whichever app you've chosen to listen to us on and drop us a quick rating and a review. It really does help us out in terms of visibility so that this show continues to grow. And remember, we are on Patreon now as well. Patreon.com/RPG Era. Check out our tiers, see what we're doing. If you feel inclined, toss us a couple bucks each month. If not, continue to listen to the episodes as they upload each week. Works wonders as well. And of course, special shout out to current executive producers, Jexax and Zenku. All right, we're back. It didn't take that long. We took a week off. Again, and it'll keep happening. I promise it'll keep happening from time to time.
Happens every now and then.
Happens to the best of us, but we didn't skip a ton of time. We're back with another episode, and we're going to jump in with a little what's new with you and a big game recently came. We got a lot of big games coming out now. Obviously, it's the fall season, and we are in the almost holiday season now. A massive game comes out this week, but last week, well, no. 2 weeks ago, roughly, maybe like eight days ago, something like that. Yeah. I don't even know. A game that you and I have been talking about for several years now, and a game that you and I both picked up, and I believe you are pretty far into already, maybe not pretty far. I haven't even started it yet, so right. I need you to tell me about Bayonetta 3.
I have been playing Bayonetta 3, and it's one of those games that's absolutely not okay to play when there are children around, right? So I have to wait for the right moment to play Bayonetta 3.
But what if you did? What if you did just play it whenever you want?
Oh, it's not a good look.
To who?
It's Bayonetta, man.
Who is it not a good look to?
I mean, I like reflecting on me as a parent.
Who's going to say something to you? That's the question.
My conscience. And my wife, probably. My conscience and my wife. I mean, it's the same Bayonetta that we all know. It's very gory. It's over the top sexual. And there is language bouncing off the walls.
Sounds like a perfect kids game.
It's perfect. But it's the Bayonetta, man. It's the Bayonetta that I wanted out of this. Everything is completely over the top in this game, and I've actually really been enjoying it. I can't believe how over the top everything is in this game, and I know that's what to expect in Bayonetta, but you just hope that they don't let you down, you know, when it comes to this. And within the first hour to 2 hours of the game, it is pretty much nonstop ridiculous action the entire time. At one point, you are using, like, dead bodies from things you killed as surfboards as you skate down this, like, waterfall. And then you turn into a dragon and then are using a bus as a skateboard down the same, like, deluge of buildings and waterfalls as the city collapses. And you're dodging, like, projectiles that another demon is throwing at you. And it's all happening so fast. There's no room to breathe in this game. And yet, it still has that same, like, incredibly satisfying, fast-paced, like, combo combat that you're used to from Bayonetta games. So you're, like, trying new moves, you're trying new combat, and it's just as soon as you get, like, used to a certain set of weapons, they throw a new set of weapons at you, or they throw a new demon at you, and you're constantly trying new things. It's paced so well, and I think that's what people don't talk about as much in the Bayonetta games. They talk about how goofy they are or how fun they are, but these games are paced so perfectly that you will always be just about to perfect something before something new is thrown at you. And I think that's exactly what it should be, right? And then you do get a little bit more time to perfect that skill, but now you've got something else to learn also. And you always feel like the game is keeping you on your toes intellectually and with your skills of the game. And it's just very, very good. I do think that it's held back a little bit by Switch hardware. I think that there have been a couple of times. I haven't had a lot of frame rate slowdowns. I know that's been a complaint from some people. I think the frame rate has been relatively constant, and I've been playing it both docked and undocked. So the amount of things that are going on the screen at any given time, I'm still surprised that the game is running at all, much less at a at a relatively constant frame rate. I mean, I'm serious. There are things flying all over the place. There's water crashing down, giant portals from hell opening up as demons come flying out, these mutant bio monsters like running at you and doing all these crazy projectiles. There's stuff all over the freaking screen. And the game's moving along mostly fine. And I think that's a technical marvel all in itself. And so I'm impressed with the Switch hardware. Well, I'm impressed with the developers that they were able to do this at all anyways. But also at the same time, there are some textures, there are some graphics or facial animations that I'm like, well, that's a little bit PS3, you know, like it does look a little PS3 in some parts. And would honestly probably be a much better experience on a stronger console, but it's still an incredibly strong experience. It's exactly what I wanted.
It wouldn't exist on another console, though.
That's absolutely true. The game only exists past Bayonetta 1 because Nintendo decided to bankroll it.
Because of Nintendo, yeah. But it makes me, like, I wish we could see what Bayonetta 3 would look like on a PS5 or more realistic on a PC, right? Like, I think it would be incredible looking on proper modern hardware. I know Switch is modern, but Nintendo's always outdated. When they come out, they're outdated.
What they've done with the graphics works fine for what it is, to the point that I don't even think a remaster would be that much more impressive on like the PS5, right? If they remastered it, there might be a little upscaling of textures and shaders and stuff, but I don't think it would be that much more impressive. It would have to be an entirely new remake because of the graphical style that they've chosen to get it to run on the Switch. It still has that Bayonetta graphical style. Everybody's got incredibly glossy skin. They all just kind of look like Barbies. Their legs are all goofy long. Everybody's built so weird in Bayonetta that it's like hard. Like regular humans are walking around with like 7 foot tall legs. And you're like, what is going on in this world? It's so weird looking, but it's just, I don't know. It's Bayonetta, you know?
It's Bayonetta. It's what it is.
It's Bayonetta. But I mean, they've upped the ante in multiple ways. You can now summon these demons to fight for you at any given point. It leaves you very vulnerable to attacks, but they're very strong and will take things out like immediately. And that's always super fun. I've been using them just to like go around levels and pick up consumables, which I don't think was their intended purpose, but it makes doing that very fast.
Yeah.
So tip to everybody, you know, you want to break all 300 cars on the street at the same time and pick up all the consumables, use your demon.
Nice.
Yeah. It's a fun game. And you, if you have it, play it. If you don't have it, this is going to go down as probably the best Switch game of the year.
Okay.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else that tops it. Sparks of Hope got good scores. Kirby got good scores. It'll be better than Pokemon for sure.
You think it'll be better than Pokemon?
I do. Absolutely, yeah. I do not expect Pokemon to be a more coherent and fun game than this is.
Okay. What about, like, Splatoon 3? And, like, just thinking of, like, the overall
Splatoon 3
factor of Nintendo fans. Or Xenoblade Chronicles 3. Yeah. Right, yeah.
I'm thinking about those things. And part of me wants to say that those are pretty niche games, but so is Bayonetta.
It's
not like Bayonetta's doesn't have a market. I mean, Splatoon's not my game. Xenoblade's not my game, right? And so I think that Bayonetta definitely is my favorite Switch game of the year so far and will end up that way. I know I'll like it better than Pokemon.
Until Pokemon blows you away.
Oh, if that's the case, man, Pokemon comes out, gets a 92 on Open Critic, you know.
Yeah, Bayonetta did get an 88. I know we were talking that the Bayonetta games usually score pretty high. This did get an 88 on Open Critic.
88's very, very good.
It is.
So You know, I mean, getting this late in the year, we start talking about the Game Awards and will this be considered for Game of the Year? I think it has a strong chance. I think it's that good. I think it might be a little bit too niche for a Game of the Year recommendation.
All it would get would be a nomination. It would never win.
It won't win. One of two games are going to win Game of the Year. And that being said, man, these God of War Ragnarok
reviews, baby.
94 on Open Critic. What's Elden Ring at now? 95?
95.
That's obviously, that's one review's difference probably, right? If another review
theoretically
came in, it's a 10 out of
10. Yeah.
So, I mean, those are essentially the same score. That's better than anybody could ever hope for. So I don't know. I think Horizon Forbidden West at this point has locked in a nomination. I think Xenoblade stands a good chance at nomination.
I do too.
Shoot. Not a ton of huge heavy hitters in terms of games this year, but the ones that did hit really hard.
Immortality could end up with a nomination at Kiwi's Game Awards.
That's not a bad call, actually. Everybody will be looking at it and saying, what the frick is this game? Nobody's ever heard of it.
There's usually always something more obscure, though, that gets
there's always a weird like indie game that gets thrown in.
Yeah, that likely would be it. I do want to ask you, though, how is the voice acting?
Okay, I've actually been paying quite a bit of attention to it, and it should say something that I even forgot to mention it. There is a difference. I mean, Jennifer Hale and Helena Taylor had... I will say this. I think she was probably the better voice actor for Bayonetta because
she's the one we knew, right? It was
she's
already
the one we knew, right?
Ingrained.
So,
yeah,
I don't want to say better. Yeah,
right,
better.
Right.
Better is a weird word to use there. She is the voice actor that I do associate with Bayonetta, and Bayonetta has such silly, goofy, over the top dialogue that I think Helena Taylor was doing a better job at getting that dialogue in, right? Jennifer Hale's doing a fine job, but there's a little bit less of that goofy inflection in her voice that I've come to associate that Helena Taylor did put into it. But Jennifer Hale's doing just fine. I don't think that it's a bad job at all. And to be fair, in a very, very goofy universe of Bayonetta, Bayonetta's kind of one of the more normal characters anyways. And so it's not as weird as maybe other people are finding it or as I expected it to be. It's totally fine. It's totally fine. Everybody else still sounds great. And the game is just, it's just over the top weird all the time. Within the first 30 minutes of the game, when you get your demon summons, it's because this demon won't listen to you. And so you have to do the dance, like a dance in order to like, I don't know if you're charming it or like seducing it. I don't know. It's very, nothing is explained because why would you? She just starts dancing. She's butt naked.
Hell
and
yeah.
Is just doing this like pop and lock dance all over the battlefield. There's enemies and she's just dancing all over the place until the demon obeys her.
Is she whipping her hair back and forth?
Her hair's in pigtails now, which is actually pretty cool. It's cute. But no, usually when she's naked, her hair's doing something else, which is the case here. Yeah.
Okay.
You know, her hair like turns into stuff. So
yeah,
if nobody knew what Bayonetta was, this discussion is probably so weird, but it is, it's so weird. It's just so weird. It's so over the top. I've already ditched the opening weapons. I'm now using this massive hammer that turns into a rocket launcher just because it's funnier for me to watch her swing this absolutely huge hammer around. It's been a good time. It's been a good time. It's the Bayonetta we know and love. They returned in spectacular form. You know, no company, I think, maybe, Square Enix. I was about to say no company is as inconsistent as Platinum. I think that might be true still. I think that Platinum still has higher highs and lower lows than Square Enix does.
Okay. I'm excited to play through it. I will get to it at some point this month. I just don't know. With finishing what I'm about to talk about, I still need to jump into Star Ocean. Obviously, Bayonetta now is out. God of War is on the cusp.
Like, I'm slowly getting through A Plague Tale Requiem as well.
I still need to finish that. I'm on chapter 5.
I think I'm on 6 or 7.
So you passed me up, but I haven't played in several days.
Right.
It's a lot of things right now. It's pretty crazy. Which, I mean, we kind of knew. It generally always happens. But, you know, I'm still putting a ton of time into World of Warcraft, as you are as well.
Yep. Still still throwing some hours into World of Warcraft. And we've got our first real full Nax raid Monday night.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Me too.
I'm totally excited. We may even just end up 9-manning it. I wish we could somehow 10-man it because it just makes things faster and easier. But, you know, 9-manning is perfectly doable as well, I think, at this point in stage of the game. But not only Classic and Wrath of the Lich King, but I am sinking quite a bit of hours into Retail Warcraft as well, since the pre-patch for Dragonflight went live last week. Yeah, I've been unlocking the Horde allied races. I have one to go. All I have left are the Zandalari trolls. I just unlocked the Volpera yesterday.
Nice. Volpera, cool race.
Dude,
just
I like
visually,
them.
I think they look great.
My shaman's going to be a Volpera. When I train, he's going to go from being a Dark Iron Dwarf shaman to a Volpera shaman.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm having fun all around. Like, it's a good time to be a gamer, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's a good time.
It's a good month. Lots
good
of stuff
month.
Coming out. I'm excited for, I think that with everything else coming out, it's hard to talk about it and remember that it's happening, but Ogre Tactics Reborn, I'm pretty
also
hyped for
this
that
week.
Also.
It's on the new release roulette. We'll talk about it later. Yeah, it's there.
Yep.
Absolutely. But the other game that I've been playing quite a bit of over the last month or so is the game I'm talking about this morning for What's New With You, and that's Valkyrie Elysium, the next game in the Valkyrie profile lineage, right? There is a couple other games in the Valkyrie series. There's Valkyrie Profile. There's Valkyrie Profile Lenith, potentially. Okay. I don't know how many there actually are. I'm actually looking now to see. So there's Valkyrie Profile, Valkyrie Profile 2, Silmaria, Valkyrie Profile, Covenant of the Plume, Valkyrie Anatomia, which was the iOS game, and now Valkyrie Elysium. So this is technically the fifth in the series, but fourth console game, quote unquote. Series has definitely gone downhill, right? It's peaked probably right at the beginning with Valkyrie Profile on the PlayStation. Valkyrie Profile 2 was pretty good on the PS2. The DS version wasn't anything special. The iOS version, you know, was on iOS version and sucked. And now Elysium is out. And it's basically quite a bit of a difference from what people new, I think, from the original two Valkyrie Profile games. Combat is largely just more action oriented. However, I'm still really enjoying it because of the setting, because of the characters. I do think that Tri-Ace, they're one of the better, more obscure JRPG developers, and unfortunately this might spell the end of, or not Tri-Ace, is it Tri-Ace or is it, I think it is Tri-Ace actually that developed it, but either way, I think this one might spell the end of them, unfortunately, if it is Tri-Ace developer Soleil, might be Soleil actually, I don't really know who that is. Tri-Ace was the ones that worked on the original Star Oceans too for quite a bit. It's kind of fun because this came out about a month and a half before God of War Ragnarok, and it deals with a lot of the same tropes. It's a Norse mythology game. You know, you're a Valkyrie. You are consistently interacting with the Allfather Odin, and you are basically trying to prevent Ragnarok in this game. You are, you know, going around and throughout the different missions. There's 9 main story missions in Elysium. And I am on the 8th right now. I will finish the game today. I purposely put it off finishing. I could have finished it probably the other day, but I didn't know exactly how long the 9th chapter was going to be. So I didn't want to just jump into it. It was late at night. I'm going for the true ending. So I have been doing everything that I need to do in order to get the true ending just on the first go, which thankfully the true ending only requires you to find all, I believe there's either 8 or 9 verdant blossoms throughout the world. Mm-hmm. So there are a couple different collectibles. There are verdant blossoms, which are green plant-like things that you find on the ground. There's usually 1, maybe 2. There's like 1 chapter that has 2, but there's usually 1 in each chapter. And then there's also like a shitload of, I think they're called hollow blossoms. They're just blue instead of green. They might be called something else. I could be mixing it up with like hollow bastion just because I have a lot of things in my head right now. And I don't know why. I don't know why I thought Kingdom Hearts there for a second. But the hollow blossoms, if that's what they are called, I'm not collecting all of those. I'm finding the ones that I find along the way just for the extra pieces of lore. But I'm not going out of my way to find the ones that I didn't see initially because they don't unlock anything besides a trophy and I'm not platinuming this game anyway. But I do want to see the true ending, which requires you to get all of the Verdant Blossoms. And in Chapter 9, once you pick up the final one, you just make like a couple dialogue choices near the tail end of the game and it sets you on the path to the true ending. So I'll be able to do that. I think this game, it won't be remembered. It's nothing spectacular, right? It is a pretty run-of-the-mill JRPG, and it's kind of unfortunate because Square Enix put out Valkyrie Elysium, and then the very next month, last month in October, put out Star Ocean, The Divine Force. Is that what that one's called? I think so. And neither of them are that great, right? Like, they're just very okay, average JRPGs.
Right.
But they're still JRPGs, and they're still fun. Like,
good enough.
That's typically what it is, man. Like,
right. Right.
As long as it's not a shitty game, and as long as it runs, as long as it's, oh, what's a bad, like, as long as it's not, I don't even know. Like, I have a hard time thinking of, like, a really bad JRPG that I didn't find some enjoyment in, because I always still enjoy the leveling up, you know, the character progression, the weapon progression, whatever the case may be. In this one, you are able to level up your weapons using these gems that you find throughout the world as you're defeating enemies or smashing boxes or whatever. You get all of these different colored gems that can be pumped into your weapon to upgrade its stats. You can pump them into the Valkyrie herself to upgrade like her health or her attack power, special moves that can be unlocked, increase the defense, increase her MP ability. Like, you can basically invest these gems into her or the weapons. And then you have these Enharrier. I don't know. I might be pronouncing that wrong. And Enharrier, I think, is how you actually say that, though. And that's how I'm pretty sure they say it in the game. But they are her, I don't want to call them servants, but they're basically servants to the Valkyrie, right? So as she's going around the world trying to save it and prevent the destruction of this world, which I do think there is more to the story than meets the eye. I don't want to spoil anything since the game is still fresh. We don't usually jump into spoiler territory right here, but I think there is more to it than what you're led on to believe initially, like with what's going on and who's really good, who's really bad. But when you're going through some of these stages, theoretically, like every other chapter, so maybe chapter 2, chapter 4, chapter 6, and I think chapter 7, I could have that slightly off, but there's four different chapters where you'll unlock a different Enharrier. And after you unlock one, then you'll basically do like a smaller chapter where you're utilizing their abilities or whatever to do stuff. But you have to find their fragments or like fragments of their past, whether it's items or whatever. And eventually you fight a Nipple Guard. Is that what they're called? Man,
Nipple Guards.
Nipple Guards. Yeah, that's what they are. No. I love Norse mythology, but some of the terms are so hard for me to remember, like what they actually are. But there is a word that starts with an N. I think it's Niflgard. Nifl something. Anyway,
I like Niflgard.
Yeah, it's a demon or a beast basically that their soul turns into. And once you defeat them, they become your Enharrier. And you can summon them theoretically at any time as long as you have the mana to do so. And they'll fight with you alongside you for up to a minute at a time. You can summon just one of the four. Once you get all four, you can summon all four of them at once if you're on a boss battle. And it makes the combat pretty fun, pretty interesting. You know, the combos get relatively high. They go up to, like, you know, I've almost approached the 400 mark on the combo meter before I lost it There's a lot going on. The four and her, there's Taika. She's a like a mage base, like a fire mage, more or less. There's Christopher, who is a girl, and she is basically like a paladin. Like a, she deals in like holy magic. Aegon is he's basically a knight, I guess, but he deals lightning attack. And I wish I could say that he was also like a mage or something, but he's definitely a melee knight, potentially warrior. And then there's Cypher, who is like your ice-based hunter or ranger. She deals in ranged and arrow damage. Or he. I don't, it's, they don't make it clear. And that character is very ambiguous. So I don't really know. But
got to be careful with these JRPGs.
Well, I know. Like, sometimes you just don't know.
You don't know.
Yeah, you just don't know. And then it was made ambiguous, I think, for a reason. But I do think it's a fun game. I know Justin was playing it upstairs. I think he stopped. He jumped into Star Ocean and now has been really enjoying, actually, Star Ocean. So I will probably play that at some point this month as well. I'll finish it this weekend, Valkyrie Elysium. I'll send it back because I just game-flied it. I didn't actually buy this. I didn't buy Star Ocean either. I also game-flied that. You know, these JRPGs, like I said, I usually pick them up and I add them to my collection, whether it's digitally or physically, but I just didn't feel the need to with these ones because they're nothing spectacular. And it's just Square Enix shitting some stuff out just to get some sales for the holiday season. You know, they're more concerned with, well, Crisis Core technically comes out before the holiday season is over.
That's
as
true,
well.
Yeah.
That'll definitely probably sell better than either of these two games. But we did just recently find out that Final Fantasy 16, 95%
complete. Trailer, yeah.
Yeah, 95% complete announcement, or release date announcement, sorry, should be revealed before the end of the year. That sounds like a Game Awards announcement
to me. That's
probably
a Game Awards thing, yeah. That's a big enough announcement there.
And they were saying summer, so I have a feeling it's early summer. I bet we see Final Fantasy 16 in June of next year.
Yeah, that's a good guess.
If we're getting the release date now, you know, they'll give it a little bit of breathing room between Tears of the Kingdom, which comes out in May. You know, they won't put it right up next to it, I'm sure, just because they know that Zelda's going to dominate May in at least the week surrounding it after it releases. But put a month separation between them, or like a month and a half, and you should be good. So we'll see what happens, though. But I'm digging Valkyrie Elysium. Combat's fun. World is nothing spectacular. I mean, there's some cool looking areas. It's not open by any means. They are very contained areas. You know, you do a mission and then you have to go back to Valhalla, or no, not Valhalla. You have to go back to Asgard to talk to Odin, and he'll give you basically your next mission, and you then just port there and continue on. So like, it's not like an open world. You're not traveling from area to area. You cannot even travel from area to area. You do have to select the area you're going to, and then it'll just port you there. Quite a bit of side quests that I'm skipping. There are a ton of side quests and side missions, and I'm not focusing on any of them. I may do one today before I finish the story, just because there's a trophy for doing all of them, and that would be stupid. I'm never going to do that.
That would be stupid.
I haven't done any of them yet, and there's a trophy for just doing one. I may cheap out and just pick up that trophy and just do one side mission just to have it done.
Sure.
But I just don't care about trophies that much anymore. But there is one side mission that I'm interested in that I think would be fun to do, and that's generally how I approach side quests now. Like, do I think this is fun? Is this something I want to do? And is the quest reward, you know, good enough or viable enough for me to spend my time doing it? And I think this one is. So I'll probably do that and then finish the game today or tomorrow. One of the two. I don't really know.
Then you'll be one game closer to not completing your game challenge.
I don't think I'm going to.
What was your original number?
40.
Ooh, what are you at?
20 something?
Yeah,
26, I think it is. I think I'm at 26.
I'm going to hit your number.
You will, yeah. You're at 37 as of this past week when you finished A Walk with Yayay, which will have a review available by the time this podcast posts on RPGera.com. I'm scrolling through. I'm at 26. Yeah, Scorn was my 26th game.
Oh, nice.
So I need 14 more. I need 14 more. I'll finish Valkyrie Elysium. That'll be 27. I'll finish God of War. That'll be 28. But Dragonflight comes out in less than a month, and I'll be putting a lot of time into that for the 2 weeks after it releases. I don't think I'm going to hit 40. I'll hit 30, which I think was the initial number that I wanted to choose. But then Sev and Viz both went big, and I was like, I'll try to match them, right?
Yeah.
I'll try to go for 40, but I don't think I'll hit it. That's okay.
Fair enough. That's okay.
That's okay. I just mentioned it in Discord. Yeah, I miss being able to get through games quickly and as often as I used to. Like, I just don't have the time, and the time I do have, I've been pumping into World of Warcraft, which, you know, I used to be able to do just anyway and still have time. Now I have to pick and choose, and I'm just choosing that.
Well, you're going to be pumping damage on... I know, you're a healer.
I was gonna say, I'll be keeping you alive.
Pumping heals on World of Warcraft.
Be keeping you alive.
I was big pumping the other day.
Yeah, big pumping. Big papa pump.
Big papa pumping.
Big papa pumping. It's all right. Ben and I won't let any of you die in Wrath Classic. We are
That's okay.
way too
Nax
OP
is easy
in that.
Peasy.
Well, not only that, but Disc Priest Paladin combo, no one should ever really die unless you fuck up, so.
That's true. That's true.
But that's what's new with you. So let's jump into a little Sean Waltman lightning round. And for the lightning round today, it's actually just me. We recorded this a little, well, quite a bit after Kyle and I did the rest of the episode. We recorded this like almost 2 weeks ago. And it just never posted because of, you know, my schedule limitations and everything like that. So what the lightning round is today is basically all the news that has happened, or at least the ones that we want to cover, or like the last 2.5 weeks. So this will be rapid fire. I'm just going to go through each one of these. I don't really have much to talk about. If I do, I'll say something, but I don't think I really do. I'm just going to run down all the stories that I saw. We'll make sure they're getting covered here on the podcast. And we'll go from there. Lightning round begins right now. Sony Interactive Entertainment announced that the PlayStation VR 2 will release on February 22nd, 2023 for $549.99. And if you're listening to this the day it drops, pre-orders are beginning today, November 15th, through PlayStation Direct. A Horizon Call of the Mountain bundle will also be available for $599.99. 11 new games were also revealed for PSVR 2, including After the Fall, Cities VR Enhanced Edition, Cosmonius High, Crossfire Sierra Squad, The Dark Pictures Switchback VR, Hello Neighbor VR Search and Rescue, Jurassic World Aftermath Collection, The Light Brigade, Pistol Whip, Tentacular, and Zenith The Last City. I will be doing my best to secure a pre-order for the PSVR 2 today during the release on PlayStation Direct. I'm going to give it a shot. If I can't get it through there, I'll try my luck at either Best Buy or Amazon or GameStop or whatever, but I'm hoping I can just get it through PlayStation Direct. Remedy Entertainment has signed an agreement with 505 Games to co-develop and co-publish Control 2, a sequel to the August 2019 released Control for PC, PS5, and Xbox Series. No further details are announced as of yet. I'm looking forward to this. I really enjoyed Control, especially Chapter 9. I thought that was such a fucking trip. I can't wait to see where Remedy decides to take the story with the sequel. I'll be in when it releases for sure. CD Projekt Red and developer Fool's Theory have announced The Witcher Remake, a remake of the original Witcher, rebuilt from the ground up on Unreal Engine 5. This is one of the titles teased at the beginning of October when CD Projekt Red released a roadmap consisting of new Witcher and Cyberpunk titles, as well as their new IP, codename Hader. I am looking forward to playing a remake of the original Witcher. I played it a very long time ago. I don't remember a ton about it. I remember some things. Same thing with The Witcher 2. I never played a ton of them like I did The Witcher 3, so I'm looking forward to jumping back into this when it actually releases, probably in a couple years' time, maybe even longer than that, who knows. Xbox Game Studios and developer World's Edge have announced Age of Mythology Retold for PC. It will be available on Xbox Game Pass, but a release date was not yet announced. And that's all we know so far. Age of Mythology Retold. Could be good. We'll have to wait and see. Cyan has announced a full remake of 1997-released puzzle-adventure game and missed sequel, Riven. Platforms and a release date were not announced. Bandai Namco has announced action RPG Sword Art Online Last Recollection for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, and Xbox One. It will launch sometime in 2023. Based on Sword Art Online's War of Underworld anime arc, a new story unfolds with tough challenges that await our beloved hero, Kirito, and his new friends. Players will unmask the Dark Knight and find out if Kirito and the crew will survive the relentless battling against the forces of the Dark Territory. It's the perfect game to introduce during Sword Art Online's 10th anniversary, when everyone can reminisce about their favorite Sword Art Online memories while meeting their favorite character again. The newest installment of the Sword Art Online video game series comes to next-gen consoles with a cast featuring characters from previous Sword Art Online anime. Sword Art Online Last Recollection boasts a brand new original storyline that explores what would have happened if Kirito, Yu-Gi-Oh! And their allies didn't meet their tragic end in the War of the Underworld. Experience an exciting and elevated battle system with your friends against familiar foes from the Sword Art Online series. I may check this out. It could be good. I've played some of the past Sword Art Online games, and they've been okay. I hope this one's good. That's all. I just hope it's good. Devolver Digital and developer AirEck, I don't know if I'm saying that right, have announced a side-scrolling action platformer Pepper Grinder for PC and Nintendo Switch. It'll release sometime next year. Pepper Grinder is an action-packed pirate adventure starring the titular Pepper, a seafaring soul with a passion for prospecting, and Grinder, her super-powered drilling device. Shipwrecked and robbed of her treasure, Pepper must spin up her trusty sidearm to reclaim what the mischievous Gnarling stole. Armed with Grinder, Pepper burrows through terrain and water, controls machines, and pulverizes all enemies blocking the way towards recovering her missing fortune, with interest. Pepper's progress will not be that simple, however, as mysterious beings begin to emerge from the shadows. We saw this during that Indie World showcase this past week. Kyle, I know you're really excited. This one looks dope. I'm looking forward to it. Whitethorn Games and developer Balloon Studios have announced a puzzle adventure game Botany Manor for PC and Nintendo Switch. It will release sometime in 2023. Set in a historical English homestead, Botany Manor is an exploration puzzle game in which players must investigate clues around the house and grounds to figure out the ideal habitat for a collection of rare flora. Welcome to Botany Manor, a stately home in 19th century England. Players will see the manor through the eyes of its sole inhabitant, retired botanist Arabella Green. Her collection of rare forgotten flora needs a proper home, which means it's time to do some research. Explore Arabella's house and gardens, filled with botanical notes, books, and posters, to find the right habitat for the precious plants. Use interactable items scattered around the manor and grounds in order to solve plant-based puzzles. Once Arabella starts growing each plant, she may discover some mysterious qualities within them. This one could be good. We'll have to wait and see. Paper Games and 17ZHE Studio have announced Project The Perceiver, an open-world action game for multiple platforms. A release date was not announced. In a quagmire of endless war, conviction is your only way out. Observe every facet of the world and witness a kaleidoscope of ideals. Project The Perceiver is a multi-platform Chinese open-world action game developed by Paper Games' 17ZHE Studio. The game explores clashing beliefs in a fantasy world. Experience a chaos-ridden world and meet a variety of characters as the master of varietas. Consolidate their distinctive ideals into masks and engage in the fiercest battles. This looks a lot like Ghost of Tsushima, and I'm in. This looks really cool. I can't wait to see more. P-Cube and developer Trick Jump Games have announced roguelite action game Arc Runner for PC, PS5, Xbox Series, PS4, and Xbox One. It will release sometime in 2023. On board the Titan-class space station, the Ark, a metavirus has infected Core, the station AI. Every robot on the station immediately turned on its inhabitants, and they've all mysteriously disappeared. Location unknown. This game looks good, too. I like what I saw in the brief screenshots and everything that I, you know, got to take a peek at when I saw the press release. This looks really cool. We'll have to wait and see more. Director Hiroshi Takai recently stated in Famitsu that Final Fantasy XVI is about 95% complete, and a release date is expected to be announced before the end of the year. Smells like a Game Awards world premiere, doesn't it? Speaking of the Game Awards, we will have early predictions for all of the winners for the categories that were recently announced that we'll cover next week on the show. And in 2 weeks' time, we'll be making our official Game Awards world premiere predictions, so stay tuned for that. It was also revealed that Final Fantasy XVI will be available exclusively on the PS5 for quote, at least 6 months, end quote. At least 6 months. Will probably turn into a year, though. PC Gamer will host the PC Gaming Show 2023 preview this Thursday, November 17th, at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific. The show will feature a cocktail of trailers and footage from some of the most exciting games currently in development all over the world, including Kerbal Space Program 2, a brand new game from Marmello developers League of Geeks, Shadows of Doubt, The Great War Western Front, and more. I will likely watch this just to see what they decide to show. And we do have the release date roundup. No delays to really talk about over the last few weeks, but we do have quite a bit of release dates to confirm here in the release date roundup. Togs releases on December 7th. Chained Echoes releases on December 8th. Infinite Guitars releases on December 13th. Blacktail releases on December 15th, as does AKA Akka, December 15th as well. A Space for the Unbound releases on January 19th. Neptunia Sisters vs. Sisters releases on January 24th. Age of Empires 2 Definitive Edition releases on January 31st. Cuddly Forest Friends releases on February 2nd. Blanc releases on February 14th. Tales of Symphonia Remastered releases on February 17th. Atomic Heart releases on February 21st. Blood Bowl 3 releases on February 23rd. Void Terrarium 2 releases on February 28th. Woe Long Fallen Dynasty releases on March 3rd. Fatal Frame Mask of the Lunar Eclipse releases on March 9th, as does Kyle's favorite named game for 2023, Oni, Road to Be the Mightiest Oni, releasing also on March 9th. And that is your Sean Waltman Lightning Round for this week.
This is Kyle, and one day you can be too. Every Friday, I host what is soon to be your favorite podcast, The Media Files. Me and one of my best friends talk about pop culture happening so that you don't look like an uncultured swine during those boring water cooler conversations. Laughs are shared, tears are cried, and sometimes we have really interesting special guests that you might be familiar with. Download The Media Files wherever you download podcasts, and remember, be kind, be honest, and we'll see you later.
Kyle, you're back with me. I did the new release, or the lightning round, that's what it's called. I did that on my own. You're back with me, and you know what that music means. It is time for the new release roulette. And we have five games on the list this week. There are several more that are coming out this week. I chose five. I think these probably may not even be like, I mean, they're definitely some of the biggest coming out this week. I might have left off a big game or two that was just releasing on PC or something. But I'm pretty excited about several of these games on the list this week. So let's run down it. Game number one, coming on Tuesday to PC, it's A Little to the Left. A Little to the Left is a cozy puzzle game that has you sort, stack, and organize household items into pleasing arrangements while you keep an eye out for a mischievous cat with an inclination for chaos. Check out this playful and intuitive puzzler with 75 plus satisfying messes to tidy. I know Sev is pumped as hell for this game.
Yeah.
I think it looks rather charming.
I think it looks super cute. I think it looks like a lot of fun. Whether I pick it up or not remains to be seen, but I'm excited for it. I want to see how it does.
Yeah, I could, you know, I could see this game maybe sneaking its way onto Game Pass PC in the future. That is a possibility.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility. But if the price is right, if the game does well, I could also see myself just picking it up because it does look fun. It looks like a fun puzzle game, so I'll be keeping an eye on it for sure.
I'm going to see if I can find a price to this.
Okay, you do that. I'll read number two, which is coming on Tuesday to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It's Sonic Frontiers. Worlds are colliding in Sonic the Hedgehog's newest high-speed adventure. In search of the missing Chaos Emeralds, Sonic becomes stranded on an ancient island teeming with unusual creatures. Battle hordes of powerful enemies as you explore a breathtaking world of action, adventure, and mystery. Are you excited for Sonic Frontiers?
I'm holding my breath.
Me too.
But I don't know that this is going to be an amazing game.
Reviews are dropping on Monday. Reviews do come out Monday, so the review keys did go out in time. Not like Harvestella, where they went out, you know, like a day and a half before it released. And right, nobody had a chance to get through it because of the amount of content that I do think that game's going to come in probably around like a 70 to 72.
I was going to say 71. Yeah.
Yeah.
Based on the reviews that I've seen so far, that's what it looks like.
Yeah. I do think Harvestella is not going to quite hit the mark that I thought it would. I do think it's struggling in some areas, but excelling in other areas. I mean, there is a lot of content in there. I think that, you know, people were saying that the exploration and combat is quite a bit stronger than the farming and that kind of stuff. And I think it just depends on what you're going into Harvestella looking for. So, but Sonic Frontiers, I think, could bomb, but it could also do really well. Yeah, but it could also do well, depending on what happens. I am game flying this game. I'm not buying it. I am going to have it from Gamefly. So I'm hoping that I will be able to jump into it. I'll probably send, like I said, Valkyrie Elysium will be back in the mail Monday. This should ship in time. So we'll see. Hopefully. I do want to play it. Did you find a price on Little to the Left?
No. Still looking.
Okay. Okay. Well, then you keep looking, and I'll move on to game number three.
Here we go.
Coming on Wednesday. To PS5 and PS4. It's God of War Ragnarok. I'm surprised it's releasing on a Wednesday.
Kind of weird, right?
Yeah, yeah, a little weird. Fimbulwinter. I wonder if that's pronounced Fimbulwinter. Probably. Is well underway.
If it's Norse, yes.
Yeah.
It's probably like Timbulwinter.
Fimbulwinter is well underway. Kratos and Atreus must journey to each of the nine realms in search of answers as Asgardian forces prepare for a prophesized battle that will end the world. Along the way, they will explore stunning mythical landscapes and face fearsome enemies in the form of Norse gods and monsters. The threat of Ragnarok grows ever closer. Kratos and Atreus must choose between their own safety and the safety of the realms. I don't think there is anyone that is not excited for God of War Ragnarok.
I think everybody should be, even just as a... You know, video game enthusiast, a game like this coming out is monumental and is going to make huge waves and a big splash, and it's going to be good for the industry. This is a big, big release.
Yeah, this is a big one. Obviously, we'll go down as the second highest rated game this year unless some other 10 out of 10s come in before the end of the year to boost it up to the same score or even higher as Elden Ring. I don't know that that happens, though. But kind of exciting, right? That we had one of those at the beginning of the year in February and one of those at the end of the year in November.
Right. And it should be said, too, everybody says, well, recency bias, God of War is going to win. And that's not the case. The last few Game of the Year winners at the Game Awards have all been in like the first half of the year, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to double check that. Can't find a Little to the Left price, by the way. We'll have to wait. But I'm gonna fact check myself right now.
Okay. Okay. All right. Well, I'm excited for God of War Ragnarok.
Me too.
I am hoping, because I don't, you know, I've seen the trailers, right? I've seen everything that we've seen in the trailers. But other than that, I've not been diving deep into what the game is going to present. So I am looking forward to seeing if we go to some of these realms that we skipped in the first one, because we didn't go to all of them. There were some that, you know, you just weren't able to go to through the gateways or whatever, if you remember.
Right.
Not all of them were accessible. So we will see. Game number four coming on Friday to PC, PS5, PS4, Xbox Series, Xbox One, and Nintendo Switch. It's Atari 50, the Anniversary Celebration. Atari 50, the Anniversary Celebration takes you on an interactive journey through 50 years of video games. This massive selection of over 100 games spans 7 different platforms: arcade, the Atari 2600, 5200, 7800, Atari 8-bit computers, and, for the first time ever on modern consoles, the Atari Lynx and Jaguar. Play the classics like Tempest 2000, Asteroids, and Yara's Revenge, or dive into some deeper cuts. This is a pretty cool celebration, a pretty cool compilation of games.
Yeah, super cool.
Yeah, I like this a lot. I think this would be something fun that I would pick up on a sale, but never right away.
So. All right, Game of the Year winner since 2015. The Witcher 3, that was in April. Overwatch in May. Breath of the Wild. God of War was in April. Sekiro was in May. Last of Us Part 2 was in June. It Takes Two was in March. There you go. All of the Game of the Year winners since 2015 were in the first half of the year.
There you go.
Wow, that's a neat little interesting stat for you.
Yeah, how about that? Giving some hope to all the Elden Ring fans out there. I do think that has still a really, really solid chance of winning.
I think it will. I think even if God of War is technically a better game in terms of performance or whatever else, I just think that the cultural splash that Elden Ring made was way too big.
We shall see. We shall see. Our fifth and final game this week coming on Friday to PC, PS5, PS4, Nintendo Switch, Tactics Ogre Reborn. Based on the 2010 release, the game features improved graphics and sound, as well as an updated game design, bringing to life a new Tactics Ogre that remains true to its roots. Tactics Ogre veterans will experience a game that surpasses their fondest memories, while players new to Tactics Ogre will discover a game unlike any they've ever played. Reborn and deeper than ever, the game enables players to immerse themselves in the world and intrigue of Tactics Ogre like never before.
I'm really excited for this.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for this.
I may not pick it up on day one just because, like I said, Bayonetta 3, Plague Tale, God of War. But this is something that I almost definitely will pick up by the end of the year. I'm going to get this. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Me too. Scoring the highest this week. I mean, we already know it's God of War Ragnarok. I mean, there's nothing else it can be.
We know it's God of War, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a no-brainer because the score's already out, so we can't even really say that, hey, we're smart, even though we would have picked that anyway.
Yeah,
and then
that's my pick
the
of the week,
lowest,
too.
My pick of the week as well. Scoring the lowest, I have to go with Sonic Frontiers just based on what's probably going to happen.
We're in agreement.
Yeah, all right. Fully agreed on the new release roulette. Let's see what happens. Kyle, 2 weeks ago, as we move into our main discussion here, we were going to talk about, you know, we were trying to figure out last week when we skipped, and we weren't going to skip right away, but we were trying to figure out, like, what are we going to talk about? And you presented the topic to me that Game Pass is, I don't want to say it's declining, right?
No. It's not declining. It's growing.
It's growing. It's growing. But it did miss its subscriber mark for the second year in a row, I want to say it was.
I think it's the third year in a row, actually.
Third year in a row. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
I don't think they've ever met their subscriber mark. Now, this is an arbitrary number that Microsoft picks as is the number we want to see
goal,
by the end of
right?
the year.
Yeah.
It is not the profitable number. It is the hopeful number, right? This is profit plus some in order to say, you know what, we were very, very successful this year. Good job, everybody, right? And if they surpass that mark, wow, what a success this was. And if you miss it, oh, how come we missed it? You know, are there things we could be doing better? It is a number that does have some science behind it. They do their market research, you know, and say, well, there's this many Xbox, this many PCs. How could we get this many numbers? And they try to, you know, wheel and deal with bringing games onto the service in order to hit that number. And they try to get a price point. You know, there really is a lot of science. None of this is arbitrary in the way that they're just guessing. But this number is not some magic number that means that, you know, miss it and Game Pass goes away, right? It's just a number that they're very hopeful to get. And so they did miss it for, I think, the third straight year, which is it's not ominous, right? But it's also a little surprising, I think, to me.
It is, because, you know, we sing the praise of Game Pass pretty consistently here. And I think a lot of other outlets and podcasts do as well, just because of how crazy the service legitimately is on the surface, right? You get access to the entire first party collection for Microsoft on day one for just $15 a month, theoretically, if you're, you know, having the Ultimate Edition.
Which is pretty scant lately, to be fair.
Yeah, there has been like zero in 2022, maybe like one or two, but there's been basically none. And that is something that Phil Spencer has talked about as of recently. He did say they recognize that 2022 was really barren in terms of Microsoft output, but that should pick back up in 2023. But on top of that, you get, you know, access to, and I'm counting Bethesda with Microsoft since they're technically one company now. But you also get access to a majority of Ubisoft releases, since Ubisoft Plus was kind of folded into it. You do get access to a lot of the EA releases, since EA Origin Plus, EA Plus, what do they call theirs? I don't even know. But that's baked into it, like the normal version of it, not the pro version, where you get access to like new releases on day one, but the normal version is baked into Game Pass. And soon, and it's kind of already started happening, we will start getting access to Activision Blizzard games as well.
Correct,
through Game Pass. It's a spectacular deal for just $15 a month to get all of these games on day one, on release day, available to you. And then a consistent rollout of other third-party games, other major AAA games throughout the months and weeks as they release new things. It's pretty crazy. And the other side of this story is that Phil Spencer, maybe because of the subscriber base not hitting its mark for several years in a row, could be increasing in price.
You know, I don't think that the price increase has so much to do with missing the subscriber mark. I think that Phil Spencer's a pretty intelligent businessman. I think that the Xbox Series X and the Series S, the pricing and release strategy of those consoles was incredibly intelligent. They were priced very fairly. And I think that, and the way that they did the, what was it called? All access, where you could make payments on it in order to get it, you know,
basically for financing it. Yeah,
exactly. I think that was very, very intelligent. You know, he makes good business moves with Xbox. I think that not meeting the number is the reason for the price increase. Is not the reason for the price increase. I think that the price increase was going to be inevitable no matter what, right? Netflix
As they continue to add to the service, this service realistically is worth more than $15 a month.
I agree. And that's $15 a month for Ultimate, right? To get it on both PC and console, which I do.
Right. Me too.
I pay for that because I think it's worth it. I like being able to cloud save my games and jump between. And we make a lot of use of Game Pass in our house. I like it. I think that $15 a month is a reasonable asking price for that. And I would continue to pay $15 a month. I don't think that a price increase is going to be, you know, I don't think they're going to up it by doubling the price. I don't think that's going to be the case. We might get a couple of dollar increase, maybe up to $20 a month for Ultimate. And if that's the case, I think it's probably still worth it. I think it's a price that I would continue to fork out every month because the value of the games is there. There's a couple games this month that I'm going to download and play, and those games would cost me more than $20, right?
Right. So, saving money, yeah.
I'm going to download Gosong and play that.
Ooh,
and
that's, me too.
And that's a $20 game. So I'm already saving money just by playing Gosong.
I probably will play Return to Monkey Island on Game Pass.
Yeah, exactly. Which
this
is
week, actually.
That it's getting released so soon. That's very cool. Gosong has like an 84 on Open Critic right now. That's getting really good reviews. And you know I love a Metroidvania, so
I know.
I'm there for it.
I'll be downloading that too.
Yep. And I think it's out now. I think we can go ahead and download that. But
I think so. And we have Pentiment coming next week, which I'm really looking forward to, and Somerville potentially.
Yeah.
There's always a steady flow of releases that I'm always looking forward to.
Even in the slow months, there's one or two games that I'm interested in.
Correct. Yeah, this they month, never really have like a down month.
The first couple weeks of this month, there's like three or four. So good month, you know, and last month was good as well. There was a lot of horror games that came, you know, around the holidays or the Halloween season. I thought that was beautiful. Perfect. It's just been a great deal. Now, you always have to wonder, too, that if increasing the prices, whether or not increasing the prices is going to affect their overall profit, right? Will the increase in price cause enough people to drop the service? And I think that's what's happened recently with Netflix. Netflix, the actual service and what they provide, has been getting slightly worse over the years, but their price has increased. And I think they're dropping subscribers. And you've got to wonder, is Reed Hastings still the CEO of Netflix? I think he...
I have no idea.
He is.
Yeah, he is.
Reed Hastings. Yeah, you got to wonder, you know, in those board meetings, if they're not thinking, all right, you know what, let's drop the price a little bit. They're introducing an ad supported tier for Netflix. Did you see this?
I did.
An ad tier, but it doesn't include all of the Netflix originals. You can't watch like House of Cards or Orange is the New Black and stuff like that on the ad tier, which I think is just an awful decision. There's just very weird decisions going on there, and Netflix has been kind of declining over the course of the past 2 to 3 years. And I think that, you know, them being kind of the pioneer of streaming technology and streaming entertainment anyways, you know, other companies kind of get the benefit of looking at them mimicking their good decisions while avoiding the bad decisions. Right. And so it'll be interesting to see how the price in the most recent price increase and this ad supported tier of Netflix affects their subscriber numbers and whether or not Phil Spencer tries to emulate those decisions or steers away from those decisions based on how that affects Netflix's performance.
I think we see the price increase probably once Activision Blizzard's deal officially goes through and their games come to the service. I think that's probably a solid time frame that we could expect to see maybe the price jump to like $19.99 a month or something like that.
Sure.
But you mentioned an intriguing thing here, ad-based. Is there a way that they could figure out a way to implement something like that for Game Pass?
Like, Because I was thinking about that as well. And I don't know that people want to sit through ads in order to play games, right?
What if
we are conditioned to sitting through ads while watching TV shows because that's how we all grew up watching commercials every 10 minutes, right?
Right.
So I think that's already built into our mind to some degree. I watched the new Weird Al movie last night, turned into the Media Files. It's going to be next week's episode. But okay. I watched the new Weird Al Yankovic movie last night, and it's free on the Roku channel. And there are a couple spots where it stops for about 2 minutes of ads. No problem. I got up, I peed, you know, got a drink of water. Checked Discord, you know, like it wasn't a big deal. If my game did that, I might punt my console out the window.
So I don't think that it would, I don't think they'd be able to do it like in the midst of gameplay. But like, what if in order to download a Game Pass game, you had to sit through like a couple ads to download it? Or
Worth. I'm in.
Before the game starts, like if the game was downloaded via Game Pass, when you go to start the game, you have like 2 minutes of ads.
See, something, now you're touching on something interesting, and I'd really have to consider that.
But it would bring revenue, and it could be a way to offset some of the cost.
Well, and I think too, as the younger generation starts to grow into playing on consoles, right? These are kids that many of them are used to playing games on phones or iPads, right?
Their parents do that.
Which do that. And so I wonder if that's not going to become the new norm, if mobile gaming hasn't kind of ushered in this pre-gameplay or mid-gameplay ad system, right? And they're just used to that in the same way that we've been conditioned to accept commercials halfway through our television show.
It's an intriguing possibility.
I don't like it, but you're right.
Yeah. Like I said, as long as, like, you know, you're not in the midst of a cutscene and then, you know, it fades to black and you see, you know, 2 minutes of ads and then the cutscene fades back in and it continues. Like, that would be really unfortunate. But I could see before a game starts, right? Like, you click on the game to start it. Your console recognizes it was downloaded for free via Game Pass. Here's 2 minutes of ads. Or when you go to actually download it, here's some ads while it's downloading, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you have to sit through these ads to enable the download to go. It's a possibility.
It is a possibility. And I don't put anything past these companies, right? I mean, they will try everything.
And if they've never thought of it, they're going to hear it now and be like, oh, shit, these guys are onto something.
Max Level did it again.
They're onto something.
Those geniuses.
They did it. And everyone else is going to come for our heads because we're going to get blamed for it now.
No, that's true.
It's all right.
Yeah, there goes Max Level. There goes RPG Era.
Let them come.
They were the guys that ushered in the
ad-based gaming. Ad-based gaming. Oh, man. All right. Well, you know what that music means. Before we get out of here, we need to do a little Kickstart My Heart. And I put this one on here for you, Kyle, because it's a colorful RPG inspired by Paper Mario, featuring snappy combat, genre-bending levels, and heaps of cartoony charm. It's Flint Buckler Wakes the Sleepy Castle. Didn't we know this was coming?
I think so, yeah. I've heard the name.
Yeah, so it's finally on. I know for a fact it was posted in our Discord by somebody at some point in the last few months that this was going to be coming to Kickstarter later this year. It's on Kickstarter. As of today, the day we're recording, if you look at the goal, their goal was 29,668. They're sitting at 29,963. They hit their goal today already. Yeah, just barely hit their goal. Still 26 days to go. This game looks super, super charming. Going down, it's targeting release in early 2024 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation, and Xbox. Let's briefly read about this game here. When Flint Buckler, a classic fairy tale adventurer, storms the Sleepy Castle to defeat his evil dragon arch nemesis, he finds the once intimidating fortress has been converted into corporate offices. The villainous dragon is nowhere to be found, and all of its colorful minions have become mindless coffee-sipping, report-filing drones. What happened? It turns out that storybooks are an untapped market ripe with valuable resources, cheap labor, and profit to be had. So naturally, railroad conglomerate Ever After Inc., I like that, found a way to intervene. With the Sleepy Castle as their new corporate headquarters, Ever After Inc. is hell-bent on taking over every storybook they can. And it's up to Flint Buckler to stop them. Flint must band together with other fairy tale characters and travel across twisted storybook worlds in order to wake the Sleepy Castle from this capitalist nightmare. This just sounds so damn cool, dude.
It's It's cute, man. And the way that they're flipping the script on the fairy book tales, I think that's really cute.
Yeah. It says it's going to go from sci-fi to noir murder mystery. One moment you'll be fleeing Lovecraftian terrors, and the next you'll be up against villainous versions of the Three Little Pigs. I like that. The Sleepy Castle acts as the game's hub, as you use its library to dive into the corrupted storybooks and stop Ever After Inc. from their nefarious activities. You will gradually take the castle back from their corporate grasp, room by room. Boy, the graphics in this look. It's like a mix. You know what? It reminds me of a mix between Paper Mario and Cuphead.
Yeah, definitely.
In terms of like the graphic style that they're going for here. It definitely looks more, you know, cartoony, old school cartoony, but still keeping the charm of Paper Mario. Turn-based battles just like Paper Mario had. Man, this game looks so cool. Six vast storybook worlds brimming with quests, treasures, and secrets. Fast turn-based system, memorable characters, a jazzy big band soundtrack. All right, all right. Love I like that. Dude, look at this. We've got like, I don't even know what some of these characters are supposed to be from. Tinder the Dragon, Wolfgang the Wolf, Patches the Doll, I guess. Ava the Skeleton Witch. I don't know what some of these characters, like what books are supposed to be from. We got the Three Little Pigs. Like, I understand that.
I think Wolfgang's the big bad wolf.
Yeah. Three Little Pigs, I understand. Like, Duckster. I don't know what he's from. Moon Man. Like, I guess the cow duckling? Jumped over the moon, maybe?
I think Duckster's the ugly duckling, maybe?
Maybe. It's possible.
Who knows?
I don't really know. This game looks super cool, though. Targeting early release, like I said, in early 2024. To get a copy of the game, it would require digital copy, $19, which is not bad.
Not bad.
Not bad at all. $19 to get a copy of the game, I think, is a good price point. Digital copy of the game plus the Golden Knight armor when it comes out. So check this out. I know we're running a little short on time, so I don't have a ton of time to go into everything in this Kickstarter. Go look it up if you're intrigued by what you're hearing, a Paper Mario-inspired game. Again, on Kickstarter.com, the name of it, Flint Buckler Wakes the Sleepy Castle. But Kyle, that'll bring us to the close of the show this week. And you know how to end it. Whip it out.
Here it comes. Here comes the pee-pee. It's a song you've already heard because I've already posted it in Discord. We've already talked about it. It's a song I discovered this week called Violet's Tale by an artist named Ren.
Oh my God, this is good, man.
What a jam, dude. This guy is a UK-based poet / rapper / singer / guitar player / writer. And he makes these really weird little mashups of poetry, rap, song, guitar playing that are just a blast to listen to. They're a little gritty and dark, but they're incredibly, incredibly well put together. He's a masterful guitar player and a really cool storyteller. The one that turned me on to him, the one that I posted in Discord, it's already in there. Go look at it. It's called Violet's Tale by Ren, R-E-N.
This episode of the Max Level Podcast has been brought to you by RPGEra.com. Please remember to leave us a rating and a review regardless of where you're listening. If you want more of us, check us out on YouTube and Twitch, and make sure you're subscribed or following at both places with notifications on. Links to where we can be found on social media, as well as to our Discord server, and all other important information can be found in the show notes for this episode.